I noticed this past week after our Ash Wednesday service that certain famous people are jumping on the religious bandwagon. Actor and music artist Mark Wahlberg now has his Mark Wahlberg's 40-day challenge. Apparently, it's no longer Lent. It's called Mark's 40-day challenge. Okay, sponsored by the Catholic Church. Music and TV talent Gwen Stefani are now promoting an app. And actor Chris Pratt is another one who is showing up and showing out for the religious cause with their ashes on their foreheads saying, hey, it's time to return to Jesus. And there's even an app now that helps support that. It's called Hallow, which, by the way, is free for 90 days. Then, if you want to keep it on after 90 days, you can sign up for Hallow Plus, which is between $9 to $11 per month, or family plan, by the way, that covers up to 6 people for $120 a year. Or you can show up here and get prayer for free. There is no cost. I'll pray with you, beside you, behind you, walk with you. And I'm sure you can find about at least 24 other friends here in this space that will do the same. For free. You don't need an app for that. If there's ever a thing as religious grifting, this is it. What a time to be alive. It seems like people are completely missing the wilderness of Lent idea, just missing the point altogether. We're going to be reading this morning from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "Again it is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." The devil left him. And suddenly angels came and waited on him. Jesus had been baptized, declared God's son, and was subsequently led to the wilderness where he is tempted by the devil. A couple things to note about this passage here. First, there is some distinction between the English words for tempting and testing, but the Greek word pirazo allows for both meanings. Tempting and testing are interchangeable here. But for us, which meaning is chosen has implications for how we come to understand the entire passage. Tempting or testing? The second thing about this passage is this. We have to understand that the idea of Satan, the devil, the accuser, the tempter, is not a common Hebrew idea. By Jesus' time, however, this character seems to be more common and operates in opposition to God and sometimes, conversely, as subject to God in God's heavenly court. I know when I say devil, you may imagine horns, the color red. Not a white, but a black goatee. neatly trimmed, and a tail with a pointy thing at the end of the tail. Perhaps even cloven hooves, too. Now, I'm here to say that that image just isn't helpful when we understand that character. I want you to take a moment this morning and kind of control-alt-delete that image from your mind. Just put it behind you. Just as Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, image of Satan, then you're not helpful. That's not going to be helpful here today. I'll be referring to this character as Satan for consistency this morning, but just forget the image. The phrase Satan uses, if you are the Son of Man, then, may lead us to understand them as tests of the hypothetical component of the conditional statement. If, then. Does that make sense? But what is Satan testing? That he's the Son of God? That doesn't seem likely, since we know in this passage, just before this wilderness experience, Jesus was baptized in the Jordan by John, God offers confirmation. This first statement compels Jesus to reveal his response to the opportunity to satisfy basic human needs. Would he use his power to curb his own hunger in the wilderness? And Jesus turns to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3. One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Here Jesus is saying that commitment to God's will can require redirecting basic needs. Jesus remains fixed upon the task at hand. Are we hungry now? Perhaps. However, we can wait. There might be a greater need for someone else. We can wait. There will be a time when we will be fed. The second statement Satan offers intends to reveal God's special protection of God's Son. Satan even quotes, here in this passage, Psalm 91, verses 11 through 12, if we're really paying attention to the scripture. Satan says this, "For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against a stone." It's funny that Jesus in the wilderness, Satan comes to Jesus and quotes scripture. Jesus, on his spiritual toes with the immediate scriptural volley, cites Deuteronomy again, this time from chapter 6, verse 6. "Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart." This comes from a passage we know called the Shema. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one," is how that passage begins. Jesus returns to this idea that guarding oneself means keeping God's words close to your heart. Testing the truth of God's words and not twisting them for his own needs. Just what Satan is doing by lifting Psalm 91. Proof texting, we call it. The third and last statement Satan offers is asking Jesus to tell us if his loyalties are for sale. Mark Wahlberg, Gwen Stefani, are you listening? The response is quick, simple, straight to the point. Jesus doesn't beat around the burning bush here. "I serve God alone. Go away." A similar set of tests sit before the exiled Israelites in Babylon in our Hebrew scripture this morning. Jeremiah offers God's words that may seem contrary to common sense. Do we fulfill our basic need for freedom, or do we submit to a godly vision that requires us to set aside our needs and wants for just a short time? Jeremiah calls the Israelites to this concept. Do not serve the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. Do not serve an abusive empire. Serve God instead. Plant roots deep. Resist. This time, the Israelites trusted and followed God's plan. Is there a time today that you see us through these words that Jeremiah offers the Israelites, through these words that Jesus offers himself in the wilderness to stay, put our needs aside, and plant our roots deep? Where in our wilderness journey is Satan tempting us? Where in our exile from true peace do we find God through the prophetic imagination inviting us to seek the welfare of the community? It shouldn't be difficult for us to see where, how, and when these things rise to the surface. They are before us as I speak. Rooted resistance requires us to keep our spiritual feet planted in Scripture while paying attention to what's happening outside our doors. As I mentioned in our children's moment, leaving this sanctuary, we go out from sacred space into our secular world, and we often wonder where our feet are. We can't run from it. It's wilderness. We're in it. So what then? Stay. Plant your roots deep. Be selfless instead of selfish. Seek the welfare of the community around us. We are a Matthew 25 community, are we not? How do we live that out? That's what rooted resistance means. How do we live out being that Matthew 25 community? I firmly believe in this world that God, Jesus, the Spirit, who we believe we are within that triune God, is being tempted by a Satan that says, hey, you know what? Just be silent. Just sit in your chair and don't say anything. Silence is complicity. Silence, a lack of action, gives power to the Satan, the oppressor. I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that we don't have much time to remain silent. Not for our children or for their children. If, then, where do we find ourselves?